to be with you. I just want to build on a little of what Elise said on the volunteer celebration. Great entertainment this year is going to include a cage match between Jeff, John, and I. And so you're not going to want to miss that. We won't tell you anything more, but you got to be prepared for that. If you're just joining us, we're in the week two of a series called Heartbeat. And what we're doing is we're looking in the life of David through the books of 1 and 2 Samuel. And we're looking at this man who was titled or dubbed in Scripture a man after God's own heart. And we're asking the question, what does it look like for you and I to live our lives in rhythm with the heartbeat of God, much like what we see in David's own life? Last week we learned that God is much more concerned with our hearts than he is our appearance, our strengths, our gifts, our abilities. That when we tend to focus on the externals, God is always looking into the inside of who we are. After all, everything that you are today, your externals, your gifts, your abilities, your resources, your opportunities are simply God's, and he's loaning them to you. And so you have an opportunity to steward those for his glory and to see in that who he has designed you to be, because he desires you deeply that you would know him and be known by him. But today what we want to do is we want to go into the narrative of David just a little bit further, and we come to this epic narrative of David and Goliath, which is really all about what it looks like for you and I to live with courage in the face of potentially debilitating fear. In fact, every story, every epic narrative tends to have a hero who has one thing in common among all of the other qualities that heroes may possess. This one thing we find in every epic narrative, and we find it here as well. If you've ever read The Lord of the Rings by Tolkien, you know that the famous character of his novel was Frodo Baggins. And Frodo was chosen both by his uncle and then, of course, by others to be the bearer of the ring. And Frodo is by no means the wisest of the hobbits. He's by no means the strongest. In fact, Tolkien says early on in his narrative that the hobbits were by no means warrior material. They were farmers. They were simpletons. They were pleasant people to be around, but they're not the ones that you would call into battle. But what set Frodo apart to be the bearer of the Ring of Power and ultimately gave him the ability to face and defeat Sauron was one thing. This common thread that ties all heroes together. He was available. He was available. In spite of the danger that he faced, the adversity that he came up against, the many ways that he was lured away from his calling, with great courage, he remained available to his calling. And if you could sum up in one word what it looks like for you and I to live our lives in rhythm with the heartbeat of God, it is this word, available. And today I want to talk about what it looks like through the narrative of 1 Samuel 17 for you and I to be available to God with our lives. Because in this narrative we also learn the one thing that has the potential to disrupt your heart for God and to keep you or hinder you from living a life of availability before him. And that one thing is fear. So I want to contrast in the best way that I can this morning this idea of living our lives with availability before God contrasted to what it looks like for you and I to be overwhelmed with fear in our lives. We live in one of the safest worlds that history has ever known, and we probably live in the safest country in our world today, yet we are still overwhelmed with and paralyzed by fear. Fear of disapproval, fear of failure, fear of inconsequentiality, that your life will amount to nothing, fear of losing a dream, fear of being rejected, fear of being found out to be a fraud. We're afraid of commitment, we're afraid of discomfort, fear. In spite of the fact that we live in a society that does everything that we can to dispel the notion of fear and to secure our own safety. And unless we come to be honest about our personal fears and deal with them in what I believe is a biblical way, in a God-designed way, not to diminish the reality of fear because it's very real to you and me. But to embrace it for what it is and to walk through it with victory, unless we're able to do that, our heartbeat for God will be diminished with time. In this narrative, what we see is we find three characters. You've got Saul, and we want to talk about his faltering courage, who really was the king of Israel, who should have been called out to be one of courage. You've got Goliath, who is this champion of the Philistines, who lived with a sort of counterfeit courage. And then you have David, this young boy who's emerging as the true king of Israel. And he shows us what true courage is about. So I'm going to look at those three things. I want to look at faltering courage. I want to look at counterfeit courage today. And then I want to look at what it looks like for you and I and how you and I can live with courage in our lives so that you and I may live with availability before God. The first thing, the faltering courage. Go with me to 1 Samuel 17. I'll read for you the first three verses. You can follow along on the screen or in your Bible. If you'd like a Bible, we'd love to give you one as a gift. They're on the back shelf in the auditorium here, and please take one after the service. Feel free. First three verses, 1 Samuel chapter 17. The Philistines now mustered their army for battle, and they camped between Succoth in Judah and Azekah in Ephes-Damim. You can pronounce this better than me, most likely, but let's keep going. Verse 2. Saul countered by gathering the Israelite troops near the Valley of Elah. So the Philistines and the Israelites faced each other on opposite hills with a valley between them. Now, this is sort of an epic scene because what you have are two battling countries or peoples who have forever been opposed to one another, the Philistines and the Israelites. And once again, they set up camp against each other. Their battle lines are drawn. Israel on one hill, Philistines on the other, facing one another. And in between them is the danger zone. It's the valley of death. Through the eyes of my son Brooks, I already gave props to him. This is the WWE like cage match of all time. I mean, this is a stellar scene waiting to take place. In the middle of it all, Goliath, he's a champion of the Philistines. He steps out of the ranks and begins to challenge and taunt Saul and the Israelites. Now, I want you to notice in the text what the writer describes Goliath as. One word, he calls him a champion. He's a champion. Now, to be a champion was to be a man or a woman, a person who goes into the fray, a warrior who would stand in the arena on behalf of another group of people. To be a champion is to be a representative. It's not necessarily to be the one who is victorious. It's the one who represented everyone else. So as an example, the Summer Olympics are coming up in London, just a couple of months away. One of my favorite athletic events of all time. My sons and I, maybe our whole family, will be glued to the television for a couple of weeks as our elite athletes step onto the stage competing against athletes from all across the world. Now, when our athletes compete against one another, whether it's track and field, gymnastics, swimming, I think you can make an exception that curling is not a legitimate athlete sport, but if you're a curler in here, I apologize. And so you have these elite athletes stepping onto the stage, and what they're doing is they're representing our country, right? So you and I, in a real way, are being represented by elite athletes. So in the comfort of our home, on a sofa eating Doritos, if that athlete wins, so do you. And if they lose, so do you. And so you're hoping for great courage, which is why you and I, we just cheer on the athletes who represent us. Goliath is this figure for the Philistines. He's the champion. He's the representative. And Saul is the king and the champion of Israel. He too should be the representative. Yet when Saul laid eyes on Goliath, and in the text when he begins to hear Goliath taunt and call down on the Israelites to send out their strongest, that he may defeat them and destroy them and make the Israelites the slaves of the Philistines, Saul has everything necessary to be a champion, and yet he wilts. He falters. And this is what fear does. In the face of danger, when you are threatened, when your heart is laid bare, when you feel vulnerable, fear makes you shrink back. Your heart falls. I can remember the only time that I have ever challenged someone to a legitimate fist fight came in the eighth grade. kid by the name of Brandon Kim. It's been 20 years plus since I've talked to him, so I can tell this with confidence that he is not listening. I challenged him. He was like the school punk of all punks, and I had finally had enough. And so I came up to him one day, and I said, Brandon, you and me, after school, across the parking lot from the playground under the tree. That's where we're going. That's where we're meeting, and I'm going to tear you up. Now, I understand you look at me, and I'm a towering just bulge today. But if you – just joking. You can, In eighth grade, I was about 5'4", 98 pounds. And so I challenged Brandon. I have no idea where the courage came from. What I did not expect was that he said yes. I did not see that coming. I thought just the overall intimidation that you feel, you know, when you're in my presence would sort of wear off on him as well. So after school, on a warm, sunny day, there we are, finding ourselves under the tree, across the parking lot from the playground, in a field, me and Brandon Kim. So here's what happens. Just as things are heating up, as they do among eighth grade boys, you know, we begin pushing each other and taunting one another across the way, and things are heating up, and we're just getting ready, I think, to come to blows. I ran. Can you believe that? Now, now, I'm telling you, if you are in eighth grade and you're listening, there is one thing that's worse than challenging someone to a fight and absolutely getting the snot beat out of you, and that is running, because I lived the consequences of that choice for the remainder of that year. I was a coward, and that's what fear does to you. It makes you run. It turns you into a coward where your heart falls. Courage, on the other hand, is when your heart stands fast. To have courage is simply this. It's to have the ability to stand tall and to hold to what is right and good and just and merciful and compassionate and sacrificial and self-giving and loving for the good of others, for the glory of God. That is courage. And it sounds good, but the truth is, many of the times you and I are cowards deep in our hearts. Some of us this morning are terribly afraid of disapproval. If this is you, your primary concern is to do what others believe is the right thing, and therefore you rarely stand tall, because doing the right thing will rarely endear you to others. I can speak candidly here because the approval of others, I've confessed to you before, has been an idol for me in my life. There are very few things that will hinder your ability to live with availability before God than the need to secure and run after the approval of your peers, of your colleagues, of your family members, of your friends, whatever it is. If your heart is set after the praise of man, you will never be able to run for the praise of God, nor rest in the praise of God that has already been given to you, because he loves you. You'll never be able to do it. Some of us are afraid of commitment. Some of us this morning, you have a very wide circle of acquaintances, but virtually no one knows who the real you is. People pursue you to spend time together, but you're unavailable. People want to get to know you, but you're emotionally guarded. You have so much to offer to other people, but you're unwilling to give it. And more times than not, this is because of an underlying fear of rejection that says, if someone gets to know the real me, they're not going to like me. So it's easier for me to stay at a distance, to allow people only so far in than it is to expose who I truly am. The fear of commitment or rejection will relegate us to a superficial level of living. C.S. Lewis comments about this in his book, Four Loves, when he says, to love at all is to be vulnerable. Love anything, and your heart will be wrung and possibly broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give it to no one, not even an animal. Wrap it carefully round with hobbies and little luxuries. Avoid all entanglements. Lock it up safe in the casket or coffin of your selfishness. But in that casket, safe, dark, motionless, airless, it will change. It will not be broken. It will become unbreakable, impenetrable, irredeemable. He says this, to love is to be vulnerable. And some of us fear more than anything else vulnerability, allowing people into the deepest parts of who we are. Some of us are afraid of discomfort. The idea of discipleship, of living our lives wholesale for Jesus, of living with a sense of radical generosity, of otherness, scares us to death. And so we don't do it. So our hearts are not available before God. Alfred Adler, he's a psychologist, said, "If you want to know what your heart really wants in life, look at your biggest nightmares, your greatest fears. If you want to know what your heart truly rests in, consider the things that you fear losing the most," is what he's saying. So consider Saul. In the text, when Saul is faced with battle, when his reputation and need for safety is threatened, what does he do? For 40 days, he shrinks back and sits in his man cave. And what does he do in those 40 days? He calls on one of his own men to go out to battle against Goliath. And he even sinks to offer his own daughter as a prize to that man. Now, here's what I'm saying as a dad of two daughters. I don't care how successful or accomplished you are. I am not putting my daughter on the block for auction. And this is Saul's heart because he's afraid. And so he's expecting someone else to go out and to wage battle on his behalf. Over time, Saul will become more self-absorbed, more paranoid, just in a matter of chapters, more vengeful and untrustworthy. He is no longer available to God to be used by God or to see God work in and around him. That is a faltering courage, but it is also what fear will do in our hearts if left unnoticed, untapped, unaddressed. The second kind of fear that you and I see comes a little bit later in the text. Read with me in verse 5, and we see it in this person of Goliath, a sort of counterfeit courage, which on the outside you and I would see Goliath as sort of a man's man. We'd say, well, he must have been this champion with great courage, but look at what the text says. Verse 4, "Then Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, came out of the Philistine ranks to face the forces of Israel. He was over 9 feet tall. He wore a bronze helmet, and his bronze coat of mail weighed 125 pounds. He also wore bronze leg armor, and he carried a bronze javelin on his shoulders. The shaft of his spear was as heavy and thick as a weaver's beam, tipped with an iron spearhead that weighed 15 pounds. His armor bearer walked ahead of him carrying a shield." How would you like to be that guy? You know what I mean? And so here's Goliath going into battle, and he has a misplaced courage. Here's how we know that. One commentator, Robert Alter, comments on how the author gives us an unusual amount of detailed description as to who Goliath is and what he is like, which is uncharacteristic of Hebrew writings. Because consider with me, even where we've been so far in this Garden to City year-long campaign, think of the great figures of Old Testament literature. Think of the Abrahams and the Moseses and the Noahs and the Jacobs and the Isaacs and on and on. Think through the text. Do we ever have a physical description of who those people are? Almost never will you find that. In fact, go into the New Testament. We don't have a physical description of Jesus, nor of Paul, nor of Peter. And yet the author here decides to give us a very detailed description of who he is. Here's the thematic purpose of this. Goliath is a man of iron and bronze. The manuscript says that he was 9 feet tall. 9 feet tall. Now, some Greek manuscripts take this and they say, well, really, he was probably like 6'8". Regardless, in a day where people tended to be on the shorter side, this guy was a giant. He was huge. Furthermore, Goliath was high-tech. He had all of the latest military equipment and technology. He was like an ancient Near Eastern Thor. He was like, boom, Avengers, bring it on. And here are the Philistines looking at Goliath, not knowing what to do or how to respond. Everyone is afraid. While Saul falters in his courage, Goliath tries to manufacture it, which is why he'll mock and he'll taunt the Israelites the way that he does. He tries to cut them down to size. What he's really doing is covering his own fears. Pastor Tim Keller talks about it this way. He says, counterfeit courage comes by banishing your fearful thoughts, by looking at yourself with confidence. It's the modern approach to counseling or psychotherapy that says, you can do it. Visualize success, like all of the great athletes. Just visualize what it will take to win, and you will be able to overcome your fears and banish all thoughts of them and look at yourself with confidence. This is the normal way to deal with fear. To say, you know what, I've just got to hunker down and I've got to overcome this on my own. In fact, maybe you could tell me this. How many of you have heard the narrative of Goliath taught like this? That what you and I really need to do is read this text, be inspired by David, and go out and just kind of grit our teeth and overcome our giants. And if we have enough faith, whether your giant is physical adversity, whether it is economic hardship, whether it is particular sin that no one's aware of, whether it is an emotional struggle, whether it is a relational difficulty, if you will just trust God enough and you will just overcome your fears, everything will be okay. Imitate David. The problem is, if I were to tell you this morning, you just need to leave here, suck it up, and have courage, it doesn't do anything in your heart. The greatest stories that we know of inspiration only go so deep in your and my life to inspire us, because they rarely reach into the deepest parts of who you and I are to help us actually move past our fears and live with courage. You see, banishing fearful thoughts is temporary and it's superficial if you do it on your own. I mean, if you face short-term hardships, you might be able to overcome your fear and walk through them with a measure of success. But what happens when you face something that requires a deep and consistent level of courage from you? What happens if you come up against something that requires of you to give deeply of yourself, that requires something that costs you deeply? You see, you and I need something in our life that allows us to face our fears and allows us to do the right thing quickly, swiftly. And fear causes us to tend to hide those things that we're afraid of, or to press them back, to suppress them in a sense, to conceal our weaknesses, to cover our faults, not to name them, and by God's grace, overcome them and walk through them. Let me give you one example to show you, or to kind of help you tell if you're hiding or covering up weaknesses in your own life. You will tend to criticize those things in other people that you're afraid of. I'll give you some examples. If you're insecure about your reputation, you will find a way to consistently level the reputations of other people. If you are insecure about your economic status, afraid of losing what you have or not having enough, you will tend to be critical of the rich or disdainful of the poor. If you're fearful about your image, you will tend to become cynical about the beautiful and look down on those whom the world does not deem attractive. If you're afraid of failing, you will find yourself secretly marveling in the mistakes of other people or rooting against the accomplishments of peers or colleagues or family members or friends, whomever it might be. A good way to figure out if you have a misplaced courage, by that I mean if you're not embracing it for what it is and running to God for who He is, but you're suppressing it, covering it, trying to grunt your way through it, a good way to tell if that describes you is if you're growing more cynical and sarcastic in your life. If rather than embracing what is true in your own heart, you live out and you inflict or cause pain in other people's lives. This is what Goliath does. He taunts, he mocks he tears down, while Saul cowers. And because of that, of course, we know that Goliath is not available to God. And the third kind of courage that I want to consider, which is really where we're going today and where we'll land, is this. What does it look like for you and I to have true courage? And I think we see that in the life of David. Read with me out of chapter 17, verses 41 through 47. As David has offered, obviously, to walk before Goliath and to represent Israel on their behalf. In verse 41, the author says, Goliath walked out toward David with his shield bearer ahead of him, sneering in contempt at this ruddy-faced boy. Am I a dog, he roared at David, that you come at me with a stick? And he cursed David by the names of his gods. Come over here and I'll give you your flesh to the birds and wild animals, Goliath yelled. David replied to the Philistine. I love this. You come to me with sword, spear, and javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of heaven's armies, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. Today the Lord will conquer you, and I will kill you and cut off your head. And then I will give you the dead bodies. I will give the dead bodies of your men to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. And everyone assembled here, will know that the Lord rescues his people, but not with sword and spear. This is the Lord's battle, and he will give you to us. Notice what David does not do in the text. David is not saying here, you know what, guys, I got this. This is not a William Wallace moment like we talked about last week. That this is not David leading Israel in a charge against the Philistines saying, we've got what it takes, follow me, we can defeat him and the army. No, what's he doing? He's constantly pointing back to God. In fact, multiple times he says, this is not my battle, this is the Lord's. This is not about me and the victory of Israel. We are a representative for the Lord's fame. David is concerned first and foremost with the reputation of God, not his own reputation. David is not concerned with his own fame, but with the fame of his God. And therefore, he willingly walks into battle, aware of the danger, yet confident in the sovereign control of God. You see, this message is by no means a call for you and I to neglect the fact that we're afraid. This is David being very honest, saying, there is danger in this battle. There is a real threat. I could die, yet I must continue. I won't minimize my fear or maximize my armor. I'll face the fear, and my heart will not fall. David understood something of the heart of God. And if you walk out of here today with this one statement about availability, take this with you, which David understood, that God this morning is not concerned with your ability. He is desiring of your availability. David understood that before Goliath, he had no chance in and of himself to defeat him or the Philistine army. He understood that it was the Lord's battle. Therefore, he was not arrogant. He was simply available. And I love verse 48, if you read with me. It may not be on the screens, but the writer says this, as Goliath moved closer to attack, David quickly ran out to meet him. I want to ask you the question this morning. Where do we get that kind of courage? That no matter what is threatening you this morning, no matter what stands in the way, no matter what you're afraid of, no matter what the cost, you will run quickly to do the right thing. Some will take this narrative and they will say, well, you just, as I already mentioned, need to suck it up and have courage. The problem with that, it's a spiritualized form of counterfeit courage. It's me coming to you and saying, if you can just muster up enough faith, God might finally be pleased with your amount of faith and reward you by giving you victory over your fear. The problem with that is the scriptures never say that if we obey God, bad things won't happen to us. this text is by no means a promise that the battles will not come. Sometimes you pray and your marriage does not improve. Sometimes you pray and the pink slip still comes in the mail. Sometimes you pray and your child does not immediately respond to or return to the things that you laid down for him when he was a youth or she was a youth. Sometimes you labor in prayer with your friends and yet your physical illnesses do not get better. Sometimes you pray and you do the right thing and you go to your friend or family member who has wronged you or you've wronged and you reach out for reconciliation and they don't respond. Sometimes you pray and you trust and yet the dream that God gave you doesn't come to fruition. This narrative teaches us that in the face of fear, if we are available to God, we can be confident that he will work behind the scenes to prevail and that he will receive glory, even if it means our own weakness, our own loss, or even our own death. How do we get that kind of courage? A kind of courage that opens our hearts to be available to God. Well, I would say this to you this morning, that you and I don't need any more inspiration. What you and I need at the core of who we are is that we need our hearts to be transformed. I want to show you a verse in Hebrews chapter 11. In Hebrews chapter 11, what you have is an author who's giving you a sort of hall of fame of faith. He's saying, this man, this woman lived their lives with great courage, tenacity, faith, commitment, and as a result, they did great things for God. And the writer is saying, be encouraged, be encouraged. One of those persons is David. Be encouraged by David. Be inspired by David. But you need something more than David. David was an earthly king. He was a weak king in many respects. Here in chapter 17, he was a boy, ruddy-faced. God did not use him because of his strengths. He used him in spite of his weaknesses. Be encouraged by that, but you need something more. At the end of Hebrews 11, the writer transitions and he goes into Hebrews chapter 12 and he says, be inspired by all of those people. But in verse 2, he says, be transformed by this. He says, we do this. We live a life of faith and availability by keeping our eyes on Jesus, the champion who initiates and perfects our faith. Do you notice the same word that the writer here uses, that the writer in 1 Samuel used of Goliath? The champion, the representative, one who stands in the valley on behalf of. Jesus is the ultimate David. He was weak. He was little David, yet Jesus was great and he was powerful, and yet he came and he went through the ultimate valley of death for you. Unlike any other religion, God is the only God, the God of the scriptures, who was courageous. In no other religion does God become human and vulnerable. Bravery in your life will come not by being inspired, but it will come by being transformed by Jesus Christ and who he is for you. God doesn't save through inspiration. He saves through imputation. What does that mean? Jesus became perfectly brave in your place. Therefore, God treats you as if you've done everything he has done. You'll never be able to face your fear until you realize that Jesus bore your worst nightmare. Are you afraid of physical pain this morning? Jesus endured infinitely more physical pain than you ever could imagine. Are you afraid of economic loss? Jesus gave up everything to love you. Are you afraid of losing face? Jesus was mocked and marred beyond recognition so that you could be beautiful. Are you afraid of suffering? Jesus suffered infinitely more, was rejected, was walked away from by his closest friends and followers. He bore your sin. He bore the anger of God that was due you and me so that you could stand in the peace of God. Jesus stood in your place. He is your champion. And when you fix your eyes on Jesus, who for the joy set before him endured the cross for you, then and only then can you live a life of courage. Why did Jesus endure the cross with joy? You ask, what joy could Jesus have lacked? He had everything, but he didn't have you. And so for the suffering of the cross, Jesus walked that road so that you could be reconciled to a loving heavenly Father. And you say, well, this is hard. Yes, it is. It is hard. You say, well, seems out of reach for me. Yes, I would say this morning it is out of reach for you to live a life of courage. For me, the same. I was getting in my van the other day with Elise this week. She's 5, and she wanted to sit in the front seat, and we've since changed the rules because for months we've broken the rules and allowed our kids to sit in the front seat, and we know you're not supposed to do that. But on this particular day, I said no, and through tears, she said to me, it's going to take forever, Daddy, to get bigger. It's going to take forever to get bigger. And she's right, it is. And in the same way, it is going to take forever for you and I to get bigger, to get the kind of courage that God calls us to, that we would live lives of availability to him. However, if you will set your eyes on Jesus, he will do through you and for you what you cannot do for yourselves. Let's pray together. Father, I want to thank you for your text. I want to thank you for the courage and the faith that you call us to. And Jesus, we want to lift you up right now and honor you that you were willing to bear our worst fears so that we might walk in the peace and the mercy of God. And right now, I pray that we would not simply be inspired by that, but our hearts would be changed by that truth. And God, that you would teach us, and by your Spirit living in us, that we would be people who live with courage and with faith and with tenacity and availability for you, for your glory. We